We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bojovics. Joining me today is Mark Moss. He's an investor, strategist, founder of the Market Disruptors, and nationally syndicated radio host. How are you today, Mark?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me on.
Excellent to have you. So we wanted to focus our conversation today around the Great Reset. A lot of the things that you see coming here and you know, some of the considerations that we need to really focus on to protect ourselves and think about what's kind of coming and what the aims are here. So why don't we start by talking a little bit about who the Great Reset is being presented by?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of different opinions on this, and some think there's maybe some conspiratorial, controversial takes on it. But I think really where it came from is just the World Economic Forum. You can just go right to their website, and there's a section called The Great Reset. In addition to that, the leader of the World Economic Forum is a guy named Klaus Schwab, and he wrote a book which came out last year, and it's titled COVID-19, The Great Reset. So both on the World Economic Forum website, you can find the world the Great Reset, and there's a book in it as well. And so that's really what it's coming, you know, who it's being led by, who it's being proposed by. Of course, if you go to the World Economic Forum, then you can find out who also was involved. They have their names and their pictures there. So, of course, it's Al Gore, you know, who's kind of been leading this climate thing for a long time, and Bill Gates and George Soros and, you know, all these people that are involved in it as well. And then, you know, it's kind of being held up by, you know, Mark Carney. He's probably one of the most connected, maybe one of the most influential people in the world right now, you know, previous head of Bank of Canada, Bank of England. And he's advisor for the World Economic Forum as well. And so those are kind of the people that are behind it. What I encourage everybody is read the book. Go read the book, go at least go to the website and go to the Great Reset part and read everything they have there. Don't take my word for it. Some people might think it's a little bit crazy. So just take, I say that I take them at their word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, you take them at your word. You say that, you know, quite a bit, and you know, the resources are right there to be able to see what they want. So what are the NGOs that are pushing this agenda, and why are they so dangerous? And is it because that they really aren't voted in like we think of our government officials, our governmental leaders, that makes them so threatening?
Yeah. So, I mean, an NGO is a non-governmental organization, right? So that's what that means. And so kind of to the point that you just made, yes, they're not voted in. We don't have a vote in that. And so, you know, the United States is supposed to be a republic. It's a little bit more of a democracy, kind of like Canada, right? So you kind of, at least the people are supposed to at least have kind of a say. I'm not a big fan of democracy. It's kind of a mob rule situation, but at least the people have some sort of a say, some sort of a vote. Leaders are, you know, elected and voted in, voted out, sort of. But in an NGO, that's not the case, right? They're a non-government organization. And so back to the World Economic Forum, right? They're not a government organization. It's just Klaus Schwab started it and a bunch of elite people have joined it. And now they've amassed this power. And really we're seeing the entire world is kind of being taken over by central banks and corporations. And so they've kind of usurped the power of the nation state and have assigned all this power. And it's not just the World Economic Forum. It's the WEF, the World Economic Forum, the World Health Organization, the World Trade Organization, the World Meteorological Association. We have the UN, the IMF, right? And so it's all these organizations, and none of them are government. None of them anybody gets to vote on, but yet they have a lot of power right now.
Mm-hmm. So what are their 8 predictions for the world by 2030?
Shoot, I don't know if I remember them off the top of my head. I think obviously the big one that everybody knows is, you know, by 2030, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy. And so that's kind of the thing that has caught a lot of people's attention. On top of that, they say the United States will no longer be, you know, the dominant nation, which is pretty crazy because that's kind of like a declare of an act of war, which is kind of crazy for them to say that. They say you'll be eating a lot less meat. Matter of fact, they don't want you to be eating any meat in any of these developed nations. They say that, of course, we won't depend on any fossil fuels. They say that organs will be 3D printed instead of being transplanted. I don't know, is that five or six? I don't know if I can remember all eight of them off the top of my head. A lot of this came down from two things. So Klaus Schwab wrote the book, The COVID-19, The Great Reset. He also wrote another book before called The Fourth Industrial Revolution. And so in that Fourth Industrial Revolution, it also talks about a lot of this stuff. So again, go read the book if you want to understand where he's going. Also, I mentioned Mark Carney. He also recently wrote a book called Values. And I'd highly recommend everybody go read that book as well, because he also tells you exactly where the world's going. But in the Fourth Industrial Revolution, they talk about how what the Fourth Industrial Revolution is it's a merger of man and machine. And they believe that we'll get to a point where you won't be able to distinguish which part is man, which part is machine. And they want our brains hooked into the cloud, into a giant cloud that's run by AI, artificial intelligence. And so if you read that book first, and where Klaus Schwab lays this out, and everybody that's a part of it obviously agrees with that, then you go into the COVID-19, The Great Reset, and you'll understand more of it. So there was a story that was written by, I forget what her name is. I think she was from Belgium, but now she's one of the major people at the WF. And she wrote the story, and it starts out saying, the year's 2030, I have no privacy. The year's 2030, I own nothing. I have no privacy and life has never been better. So that's kind of the opening line. And she goes in and talk about how I don't own anything. I don't own a house. I just stay in different places at different times. I don't own anything, but I don't need anything because everything just shows up right when I need it. If I just walk outside to go somewhere, a car just magically shows up. And the reason why she says she has no privacy and why things show up all the time, even her dreams, she says, aren't private, and everything just shows up when they need, is because the brain is hooked to this AI cloud that can anticipate everything that you need and deliver it to you right when you need it. So that's what the books say. That's what the story says. It's published on their website. So that's kind of the goal of where they're trying to push people into this Fourth Industrial Revolution. Kind of scary stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as you're mentioning this, you know, just in time delivery, it really makes me think about what we're seeing right now with these just in time inventory setups that we have and how that's all breaking down. So maybe tie that into the idea of peak centralization that you and I were talking about before we hit record here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm calling it peak centralization where we're at right now for a couple of reasons. So the first reason why I say that is because if we go back and we look at history, you can see that history just kind of repeats over and over and over. And so you kind of have this cycle. So even though the world isn't just moving linearly, it's actually moving exponentially. But even though it's moving exponentially, we have these cycles that repeat. And so basically you have, because of humans, because of greed, because of things like that, basically we have freedom, right? There's this human drive for freedom. People want to be free, but then some people want to control them and tell them what to do. So you see that on all levels, for example, from the homeowners association to the parent teachers association at schools, to local governments and on and on and on. And so what happens is once they get a little bit of power, they want more. And they get more and more and more power. And eventually they have so much power, it's just too oppressive. And that leads to revolution. The people don't want that anymore. They have this drive for freedom. So they revolt, they overthrow that, and it goes back to freedom. And then people get power, and then it goes and they get oppression, revolution, freedom. And if you go back as far back through history, you can see it's just a continual evolution or a repeat of that. And so we basically go from periods of centralization or globalization that gets revolted against, and then it goes back to decentralization. So, and those move on a 250-year time frame. So 250 years ago from right now was the American Revolution, the French Revolution. 250 years before that was the Protestant Reformation. And you can easily see that both of those were rejecting that centralization. They moved to decentralization. So in the American Revolution, for example, they rejected the centralization of the monarchy of the king, and they set up a decentralized government. So the United States was set up as a republic where all the states were independent, right? It was a decentralized form of government. And so that's the kind of the process that continues to repeat. And so it's almost like this pendulum that swings back and forth, and the pendulum hits peak centralization and then it gets rejected and it goes back the other way to peak decentralization. And I think if anybody's paying halfway attention, it's pretty easy to see that we're at this peak centralization right now, as I just listed all those NGOs, you know, World Economic, World Everything, basically, IMF, UN, et cetera. And basically the whole world now, they just, I think just in the last week, most of the nations have now signed on to like the alternative minimum tax, for example, right? That's a global thing. Obviously, we saw the whole world locked down from the World Health Organization. And so we're kind of in this peak centralization, peak globalization. But at the same time, we can see the whole world starting to reject it. Now, it's not on mainstream media, but if you get on social media, you'll see all across the world right now, millions and millions of people are marching and they're pushing back on that, rejecting that. And so I think it's easy to see that pendulum is kind of maxing out right here. And history tells us that it will start swinging back the other way.
Mm-hmm. There's two other cycles that you talk about that are converging along with this 250-year cycle, the political and the technological cycle. So
yeah.
why is this point of all three cycles converging so powerful?
So, you know, there are three different cycles. Now, when you're looking at finance stuff, you're looking for indicators. So indicators that hopefully they're leading indicators that tell you where things would be going in the future. The thing with indicators is that you don't want to just look at one, you want to look at multiple indicators that try to give you this more comprehensive picture. And so if you're only looking at, for example, right now, most people are looking at the financial sector. There's a financial revolution cycle that works on an 80-year time frame. And it's pretty easy for anybody to see right now that the financial system is breaking apart. You talk about precious metals a lot, so I'm sure you talk about that specifically, and you can see that the game is about over. And so what do I mean by that? Remember, it moves on an 80-year cycle. So 80 years ago was the Bretton Woods Agreement, which when basically the United States took over the reserve currency officially from Britain, from the pound sterling, it became a dollar currency. So, and it became a global currency. So the dollar was backed by gold and all the rest of the currencies were pegged to the dollar. So the entire world changed the money system. And today, the IMF, that's when the IMF was created back in the Bretton Woods Agreement. And today the IMF is calling for a Bretton Woods II. So what does that mean? Well, they're calling for another money system to be changed, to be created. And so we can see it's being reset right now. But in addition, we can see because really central banks have two tools in their tool chest, right? So one is interest rates and two is the money supply. Well, interest rates are at zero or negative in most parts of the world. And they've created about $300 trillion of debt. So how much more can they create? And so really one of their tools, interest rates are gone. The money supply is pretty much tapped out. And if you and I were playing a board game, if we were out of moves, you reset the game, right? That's it. And so most people are looking at that right now. People are focused on that. I mean, you and I talk about money a lot. And so people are asking like, what happens? Does the dollar lose the reserve currency of the world? Do we go back to a gold standard? Would it be the Chinese yuan? Maybe it's the Chinese yuan going to be a CBDC, central bank digital currency. Maybe that'll be it. And so everybody's asking that question, like what comes next? But I think that's a little bit short-sighted if you're only looking at that one single indicator. So if we look at bigger indicators, so I just talked about the 250-year revolution cycle. Now, what's interesting is that solutions are supposed to come to problems, right? So we have a problem. We come up with a solution. I say supposed to because today with central bank printing a bunch of money, we have money chasing things that probably don't need to be solved. You and I were kind of talking about in these developed nations, people are trying to create all kinds of problems. And so solutions come to problems. So there's a problem, right? There's the problem of too much centralization, too much money printing, too much censorship, this landscape where we went from a rule of law to now today we're being ruled by men, that's changing the laws on us all the time. We don't know what they're going to be next month. So those are problems that we have, and the world's rejecting that, and there's a solution that's come. And so this is a technological revolution. And this happens on a 50-year time frame. Now, I'm not talking about a new technology. I'm not talking about an iPhone. I'm not talking about the internet. I'm talking about a technological revolution. The difference is a technological revolution does two main differences. One, a technological revolution changes the world. It changes humanity. And two, more importantly, it drives financial markets. So let me give you some examples. So if we go back, there's been five, in the 1700s, we had the Industrial Revolution. It brought people from the farms and the cottage industry into cities and factories. It changed the way the world works. About approximately 50 years later, we had the age of steam engines and steel. So all of humanity, people had walked we had manpower and we had horsepower, and now we had a steam engine. We also had steel. So before we could build two stories with bricks, now we could build skyscrapers, we could build bridges. So it changed humanity, changed the course of humanity. About 50 years later, we had electricity. Now, electricity at the time, cool, whatever. It's like a digital candle. what do we need a digital candle for? Candles work fine. Candles have been money, or candles have been light for 5,000 years, right? They're fine. But of course, electricity changed humanity. It became more than a digital candle. About 50 years later, we had the age of oil, automobiles, and assembly lines. And so again, for all of humanity, people walked and rode horses, and now we had cars. Now we had transportation, things like that. About 50 years later, 1971, we had the age of the microprocessor, which brought personal computers, which brought telecommunications, and which brought the internet, and which allows us to do what we're doing today. And then 1971 plus 50 years puts us today, and there's another technological revolution. And it's bringing solutions to problems. So again, the problems, the 250-year revolution cycle that's repeating, is because of the centralization, right? And the more the governments try to squeeze, I think it's Newton's third law of physics, is that for every reaction, you get equal and opposite reaction. So the people push back against that. And so there's a new decentralized technology revolution that's being created right now. We're hitting right now at the exact same time that we need it, at the exact same time that the world is pushing back on centralization. And new technologies, technological revolutions drive financial cycles, and the financial system is ready to be reset at the exact same time. And so to give you kind of a little bit of a background on that, if you just go back and look at the last, 30, 40 years, or even 50 years, the entire financial cycle has been driven by computers, internet, telecommunications. If we went back before, it was automobiles. If we go back before, right, it was power companies. And so, and the other interesting thing about that is that each time we get one of those new technological revolutions, it's a different group of people that are rich, right? So the people in the computer space, telecommunications space, the Steve Jobs of the world, the Bezos and the Bill Gates of the world, were not the same in the automobile boom, right? That was Ford and Chrysler. And before that, it was Carnegie and Rockefeller, right? So it's like a different group of people each time. So that's kind of what's happening right now, I guess, in a big nutshell. Mm-hmm.
So how do they go about, pushing everybody into, let's say a CBDC? How do we go from having private property to owning nothing in 10 years? You give a great example of rental apartments. So kind of lay that out for us, please.
Yeah. I mean, so there's a bunch of ways, and that's a question that everybody always asks, like, how do we get to 2030 and own nothing? Well, there's a bunch of ways. First off, it's being done. Well, it's all ultimately being done by centralization and by policy. So the policies are a couple things. The policies of centralization cause society to break down. Centralization has always failed. The market needs to be a free market in order for it to be coordinated properly. The more the centralization tries to control things, the more things break down. So for example, all across the world, there's this new green initiative where we have to stop using fossil fuels and we have to move to renewables. So we're seeing what's the consequences of that today, in that we have energy crisis happening all over the world right now, all through Europe, the United States, even China is having, and India are having energy crises where they're literally running out of energy because per policy, they shut down the natural gas, they shut down the coal, they shut down the nuclear to move to renewables, meaning mostly wind and solar. But the problem was they shut down the energy without replacing it. And so now we don't have enough energy to go around. Now, that's a big problem. In Europe, for example, we're going into wintertime. They say people could freeze to death because there's not enough natural gas to heat their homes. In addition, natural gas has gone up by 800%, the price of it. Well, natural gas is needed for more than just heating homes. As a matter of fact, electricity companies use it to create electricity. And so now their prices have gone up by 400%. In the UK, over a dozen companies have gone out of business. 1.5 million customers are now without electricity over there. But it's even worse than that. So the natural gas is used to create fertilizer. Okay, well, what do we need fertilizer for? Oh, to grow food. That's a big problem. Also, we need it to make CO2. What do we need the CO2 for? Oh, that's to process animals, to process meat, to process food again. So these things lead to these problems. And so we're seeing energy crisis all over the world happening. We're seeing the supply chains breaking down. And so back to the question, how do we get to 2030 and own nothing? Well, a lot of it is like the systematic destruction of the system by creating policies that basically crush the economy. In addition, of course, all through the United States and Canada and Australia and everywhere else, they've forced businesses to close. They've literally taken away, businesses that have run in families for multi-generations and they're just gone. So they literally took away your property. In the United States, they did a rent eviction moratorium. So let's say that I own apartment buildings and I rent them out and that's my income. Well, they've made it where those people don't have to pay their rent anymore. And I'm not even allowed to kick them out. Well, what happens if I can't make any money? I can't afford the payment on the buildings. Well, then of course I lose them. And so it's the destruction of the economy that forces, that causes us to lose everything. And at the same time, it removes it from all the small people, the mom and pops, and then moves it to the big central conglomerates. So for example, throughout the pandemic, we saw all the small mom and pop retailers shut down. Everybody was forced to the Walmarts and the Amazons. Right now, we're having a problem with this food shortage. CNN ran an article last week saying that prepare to have much less options of food this year. And in that article, they talked about how the food manufacturers were going to be able to, were going to have to create less options. And they were going to prioritize their food because they don't have enough to go around. They're going to prioritize it to go to the largest retailers, not the small ones. So they continually push these policies that push the small business out and move it to the giant conglomerates. And so you can see it's a mashup of all those things happening that ultimately by the year 2030, you might end up owning nothing.
So as we think about how we get to that, we get to that point, let's say the goals of having a CBDC, you often say that they come with a lot of behavioral modifications.
Yeah.
So if they can print trillions of dollars, let's get into the behavioral modifications that they can, incentivize by having a CBDC, and then we'll get into the taxation side of it.
Sure. Well, the CBDCs are, you know, they've kind of spun off of like cryptocurrency. So, you know, Bitcoin came and revolutionized the world. That's the revolution. And the governments are basically trying to stay relevant, stay alive, come up with some new gimmicks where they can print a bunch of money. And so they've created central bank digital currencies. They're not a cryptocurrency, it's a digital currency. By them being able to have that, it kind of does two things. So one, a central bank digital currency is programmable money. And because it's programmable, then they can use it for behavioral modification. So for example, when they shut down businesses, they said, oh shoot, now we need money. So let's send out stimulus payments to everybody. So they sent out payments to everybody, but then the people didn't go spend the money. It didn't actually stimulate. So they could say, hey, we're going to send you, here's your $1,400, but if you don't spend it by next Friday, you lose it and it comes back to us. So it's programmable. They could say, hey, here's the money, but you can only spend it here, 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 but you can't spend it here, 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 right? Behavioral. They could say, hey, Tom, you're saving too much money. So you have a negative interest rate now. Mark, you're not saving enough. You have a positive interest rate. They could say you're this minority group or this ethnic group or this whatever group. And so we're going to send you more money than we send to them. If you do these things, you get more credits. If you do these bad things, you get less credits. And so they can modify behavior based off of that. In addition, it's total surveillance. So they can see exactly what's going on with every single transaction. And there's probably nothing more telling about a person than what they're spending their money on. And so they'll have all of that data and be able to control that. So it's a pretty scary situation. At the end of the day, though, it doesn't really help their situation. It's just more fake fiat currency. So it does give them a lot of additional control. So for example, if I have cash, I can go exchange that cash for different things they can't control. I could go buy gold or I could go buy Bitcoin with my cash. But if I have a CBDC, they could make it where I can't exchange that CBDC for gold or for Bitcoin. And so it's a big control push that they're doing, and it's pretty scary.
So one of the other things you talk about is you know the idea of the drop sell. So I guess one of the ways that we get to these CBDCs is to increase the complexity. You know, we've seen recently that the IRS wants to, in a way, be weaponized and control and tax transactions as low as $600. So talk to us a little bit about how that drop sell idea works, increasing the complexity and the rigidity of the system, and then presenting the easier and better alternative.
Well, the drop sell technique is like a sales technique, right? So it's like, hey, you want to buy this car? Okay, the price is $25,000. And you're like, what? $25,000? I'm saying, how about for $17,000? And so I drop the price, and then $17,000 sounds like a way better deal than $25,000. It's kind of a, it's also called like anchoring. And so like with these policies, they push and they push and they push, and they get so extreme that you're freaking out. And then they let off a little bit, and all of a sudden you're thankful for it. And so that's one thing that they do. And so you'll see these government policies, they ratchet up really quick and then they pull it back. In the United States, for example, maybe a month ago, there was articles going around that in the United States, they were going to ban interstate travel for non-vaccinated people. Well, that went around, that got a lot of attention. And people were freaking out about that. And so then the White House put out a press release and said, well, we're not actually talking about that for now. And so it's like this thing, like, oh my gosh, what? And they pull it back. And then the lesser thing is kind of accepted. And so that's kind of a way they just keep ratcheting things up, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really important point because, you know, the Fed does this. They talk about raising rates, they talk about tapering, and then they see the market reaction to it. They float the trial balloon, see the market reaction, and then, you know, temper their response from there. But it's a great point to, you know, get some perspective and really try to, you know, have people be aware of that.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Mark, is there anything else about, let's say, CBDCs the currency reset that we haven't touched that we need to?
I think we hit on a bunch of things. I think we're seeing them starting to roll out pretty quickly. Of course, China has been the leader on that. They have already gone through several phases of their test. Their goal is by next year at the Olympics that are supposed to be hosted in China to have their full scale release, kind of like a James Bond movie, like an evil villain, like bring everybody together and then let's release it. So bring the whole world there for the Olympics and then release their central bank digital currency. But of course, other countries are scrambling to release theirs as well. Another thing that the central bank digital currencies are doing, and this is a little bit even more scary, is that if you understand the way that money is created, you have the central bank, and then the central bank below that has like commercial banks. And then below that, you might have like local banks and things like that. And so the way that money is created is through debt. So the central bank will put a reserve onto the commercial bank and the local bank. And then the local bank will give you a loan for a house, a car, whatever. And when they loan you that money, the money is loaned into existence. That's the way it's created. So the central bank, you know, they're doing this quantitative easing. So they're putting reserves on the bank's books. But if the banks don't loan the money out, the money doesn't get created. And so the money creation is still a little bit decentralized, meaning I can go to my local merchant bank, my local farmers and merchant bank or whatever, and say, hey, I want to set up a business and I'm going to sell avocados. And they may go, that's a stupid idea. It's freezing here. No, you can't grow avocados. Nobody wants them. That's a dumb idea. And they know that because it's decentralized. It's local. They have local knowledge, right? They get to decide whether I open up an avocado stand or not. But what a lot of the central bank digital currency is doing is kind of scary in a sense where now we would have an account directly with the central bank. And then it collapses the stack and gets rid of all the banks in the middle. So this decentralized movement of banks, which still gives you a little bit of competition, a little bit of choice, if they can collapse that down, then they have total control. And then they can send money directly to the people. And so a lot of, I think, what's happening in the world is, I think maybe I talked about this earlier, but really it's kind of a takeover of the corporations and the central banks. And so it's almost like a coup by the central banks. And I think probably ultimately, if they continue to have their way, it'll be like the IMF, which is kind of the central bank above central banks. They'll release a digital SDR, a central bank digital currency, and we might just have a credit with them, and the entire banking system is collapsed and gone. So the central banks are gone, the commercial banks are gone, and we just have an account with the IMF. And then we don't really have money anymore, right? What we have is we have a credit. Your government gives you an allotment of credits, and somehow they decide that you get more credits than this guy for whatever reason. And if you do these good things, you get more credits. And if you do these bad things, you get less credits and things like that. And I think that's ultimately where they go, is they try to collapse that stack.
So how do we ultimately protect ourselves from this reset, Mark?
So the way that we protect ourselves for this reset is a couple of things. First off, It's there's a lot to it. There's a lot of angles. There's no one size fits all answer of what fits all answer for everybody. So I think we need to think about, you know, preserving our wealth, preserving our health, securing our food, you know, things like that, through this process, if you don't want to end up owning nothing and being happy by 2030. But ultimately what we want to do is we want to exit that system. And so they can control the money supply. Right? So they can increase the money supply, drop the money supply. They can cause these booms and busts that could cause us to lose everything, but we can exit that. So think of it like the economy is like the Titanic going down, but we could just hop on the life raft and we can get out. So we can do that by buying gold, right? Or silver, or we can do that by buying Bitcoin and getting our money out of that financial system. Now in China recently, they just made all cryptocurrencies illegal. Part of the reason why is like every nation at the last stages, they impose what's called capital controls. As the money is losing value so fast, people naturally want to get out of that money. So if you're in Venezuela and the currency is inflating by 1,000%, or you're in Lebanon right now where the currency is inflating by 100%, you have to get rid of that currency as fast as you can. And you have to go either to a different currency, so I'll exchange it into a dollar, or I'll go buy something with it. And so what the government does is they impose capital control laws so you can't leave the currency, because as people leave the currency, it pushes it into a downward spiral even worse, even faster. And so we can protect ourselves two ways, really. One, by exiting the system, we take our wealth out to protect it so they can't inflate it, they can't steal it, they can't manipulate it. But that's a defensive maneuver, but it's also offensive, because as we continue to pull our money away, they start to lose their power. So they can only manipulate the money supply, but if we're not in that money supply anymore, then we can't be manipulated that way. So I think that's probably the big way. Get your wealth out of that system. Don't hold the currencies that are losing value like crazy right now. Hold real assets, hold gold, hold Bitcoin. The other thing, if you own assets like real estate, as I said, you know, through these rent moratoriums, eviction moratoriums, things like that, that could be very difficult to hang onto those assets. I don't know exactly what the laws are going to be. As I said, they kind of change them all the time. And so I'm diversifying. I used to own a bunch of real estate in California or in the United States. I diversified out of California. I started buying it across the United States so that it's in different jurisdictions. But now I'm even moving some of it internationally. So now I'm building some houses down in Mexico right now. So I'm starting to diversify internationally that way. Something that I've really been working on, I know you and I were talking about offline, is even having a multi-flag theory. So having permanent residency or passports for other countries. So for example, in Australia, you can't leave the country. I think in Canada, you're not gonna be able to leave the country here at the end of the month, if you even can right now. And so having an additional passport gives you that freedom, that flexibility to move around to different countries and things like that. So those are probably three really big ways that you can protect yourself.
So as you talk about the changing laws, Mark, when you think about, and you mentioned obviously China made all cryptocurrencies illegal, how do you think about the control that they're going to place on something like Bitcoin? You know, they can try and regulate getting in and getting out, making transactions with it. So how do you, what provisions do you put in place to think about that?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on where you're at, right? So obviously, if you're in China, you think about it a lot differently than you do in the United States, and probably the United States different than you would even in Canada. So I think the answer is a little bit different, kind of depending on where you're at. But what I would say is ultimately, at the end of the day, Bitcoin specifically, as you asked, cannot be shut down. Can't. Mm-hmm. So what the government can do, like China, they could say, hey, you're not allowed to have it. If we catch you with it, it's punishable with, you know, some severe offenses or whatever. But that doesn't do anything to actually shut the network down. All it does is prevent people in China from using it. However, what's interesting is if a government tells you, like, I don't know so much about in Canada, but in the United States, we have a big drug problem. So the government can't even keep drugs out of the country. They can't even keep drugs out of the prisons. And drugs have to be grown and cultivated and packaged and processed and shipped and smuggled and distributed and all those things. And they can't even stop that. They can't even stop it out of the prison. So how do they stop something completely digital? Oh, that's right. They can't. So they can't do it. But the other thing is that when a government tells you, like, hey, you shouldn't do drugs, they're really bad for you, that doesn't make you want to go do them. But when a government tells you that you don't have the right to hold your wealth in a way that we can't steal from you and censor you, then it makes you want to go do that. And so I believe that, as I said earlier, kind of this equal and opposite reaction, the more they squeeze, the more people are pushing back. And when they tell you you can't store your wealth in a self-sovereign way, then of course you want to do that. So in China, they're still doing it. They've made it difficult. They do control, I think, as you just said, kind of the on and off ramps, meaning when I want to use the fiat currency to get into it or go back to fiat, so they can control that. But that's all they can do. In El Salvador, they've made Bitcoin legal tender. I've been doing work down there. I was down there 2 months ago, and I've created a way where people can have a job and get paid in Bitcoin. And so the people in El Salvador are literally getting paid in Bitcoin. There's no KYC. I don't know their name, their email, nothing. They just earn, they get paid in Bitcoin, and they go spend in Bitcoin. Now they can spend Bitcoin everywhere in the country. And so a government can't stop that. There is no fiat on and off ramp. They stay in Bitcoin the whole time. And so that's happening. And so, so it just depends. So in China, it's a little bit more difficult, but in the United States, I think the chance of the United States trying to make it illegal, everything is possible. So I don't deal in absolutes. Is it possible that the US makes it illegal? It's possible, but the probability of that is like just bigger than zero. At this point, we have ETFs that just launched today. In Canada, you already have ETFs. Of course, the financial system lobbies the government. The lobbyists make the laws. I just don't see them making it illegal at this point. I think the chance of that happening should have happened 5 years ago. Today, it's just barely better than zero.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a good point that the financial lobbyists really, in a way, run the system. And of course, thinking about diversity, having not only diversified wealth, but a diversified, as we said, and Simon Black says, that diversified sovereign balance sheet is really important to think about as well. Mark, is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap up here?
One thing I would just like to say is that I know, a lot of this stuff is scary. But what I would say to that is that it is, obviously. But I would like to just encourage people that one, the human drive for freedom always wins. History tells us that this is going to be reset and we're going to have freedom and prosperity on the other side. So this is not a doom and gloom thing. As a matter of fact, I'm extremely hopeful for the future. The next couple of years, I think, are going to be rough, unfortunately. But what I can say is that in times of volatility, unfortunately, a lot of people get damaged, but some people have massive opportunities. And so if you're not paying attention, if you're not prepared, if you're ignoring this, then it could be very bad for you. But if you're paying attention and you do the right moves, it could be the biggest opportunity of your life. And so don't just focus on being scared and how bad it is. Look, which it is, but look at it as an opportunity. And on the other side of this, I think there's great hope and prosperity. And if you play it right, it could be some of the biggest moves of your life. So I'd like to say that. And also we're not trees. We can get up and move. So you could leave. And also, I think we're not just sheep, right? We have a say, we have a voice. The people ultimately have the power. And so I hear a lot of times people saying, oh, they're just going to make it illegal. And I say, well, if a billion people don't want it to be illegal, then it won't be. And so think about that. Don't just be a sheep. Don't be a pushover. You have the power for that.
Excellent, Mark. Of course, everybody can find you on Twitter at @OneMarkMoss. Your website is onemarkmoss.com. Anywhere else you'd like to point to?
Yeah. So if you go to my website, just onemarkmoss.com, you'll find everything. I do want to say, again, if you navigate this correctly, it could be the biggest opportunity of your life. And so next month I'm having a live event in Miami, and we're going to talk about this specifically. I have about 15 of the top experts in the world coming to talk about how to build, grow, and protect your wealth during this time. And they're each going to tell you kind of from their perspective what they think will happen over the next couple of years, and then what you should be doing to survive and thrive through that. Meet new friends, make good community. Those are the most important things to have in times like this. And so if you can get to the United States, if you can come to that live event, I think it would be well worth your time.
Perfect. Awesome.
And then maybe we can link to that down below. It's just marketdisruptorslive.com.
Perfect. Yeah. All the links will be in the show notes. Mark, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.